Once upon a time, it was back in the days when judges led Israel. There was a famine in the land. A man from Bethlehem in Judah left home to live in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi. His sons were named Mahlon and Chilion, all Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They all went to the country of Moab and settled there. Naomi's husband Elimelech died, and she was left with her two sons. The sons took Moabite wives. The name of the first was Orpah, the second Ruth. They lived there in Moab for the next 10 years. But when the two brothers, Mahlon and Chilion, died, now Naomi was left without either her sons or her husband. One day she got herself together, she and her two daughters-in-law, to leave the country of Moab and set out for home. She had heard that Yahweh God had come to the aid of his people and provided them food. And so she started out from the place she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law with her, on the road back to the land of Judah. After a short while on the road, Naomi told her two daughters-in-law, "Go back. Go home and live with your mothers. And may Yahweh God treat you as graciously as you treated your deceased husbands and me. May Yahweh God give each of you a new home and a new husband." She kissed them, and they cried openly. They said, "No, we're going on with you, to your people." But Naomi was firm. "Go back, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Do you think I have any more sons in my womb who can become your future husbands? Go back, dear daughters. On your way, please. I'm too old to get a husband. Why, even if I said, there's still hope, and this very night got another husband and had more sons, would you really sit around and wait until they were grown? Would you wait that long to get married again? No, dear daughters. This is a bitter pill for me to swallow. More bitter for me than for you. Yahweh God has dealt me a hard blow. He has turned his hand against me." Again they cried openly. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth embraced her and held on. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law is going back home to live with her own people and her gods. Go with her." But Ruth said, "Don't force me to leave you. Don't make me go home. Where you go, I go, and where you live, I'll live. Your people are my people, and your God is my God. Where you die, I'll die, and that's where I'll be buried. You have my word. May Yahweh God hold it against me, and only me, if anything, even death, comes between us." When Naomi saw that Ruth had her heart set on going with her, she gave in. And so the two of them traveled on together to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was soon buzzing. "Is this really Naomi? It doesn't even look like her anymore." But she said, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter. God, the all-powerful one, has dealt me a bitter blow. I left here full of life, but Yahweh God has brought me back empty. I have nothing but the clothes on my back. Why would you call me Naomi? Yahweh God certainly doesn't. The all-powerful one has ruined me." And so Naomi was back from the country of Moab, along with her daughter-in-law Ruth, the Moabite immigrant. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
Thanks, Lindsay, for reading that. It's a powerful story. It's a tragic story. It's a story that Jewish people read every single year. They read through this entire book of Ruth. And it's a story that I wanted us to read together because I think ultimately what we'll begin to see is ourselves in the story. See, it's not just Ruth's story or Naomi's story. It's my story. It's your story. Because if you're here tonight and maybe you're just worn down a little bit from life or tired or feel like life's kicked you around a little bit, this is your story. Or maybe you're here and you're looking for God's plan in your life. You've heard that he has a plan and a will for you. And you're looking for what his hand is in your life. And you're just wondering because it just doesn't seem like lately you've seen it too much. You just don't know what he's up to or what's going on or why is this happening to me and what meaning is there in all of this that's happening right now? Or maybe you're just not even hearing much at all. If that's you, then this is your story. Or maybe you're here tonight and if you were honest, you'd say, I'm not sure I believe all the same things that everyone else in here believes. I mean, I believe in God and I wouldn't be here if I didn't, but I'm not sure I've just got all the answers that everyone else seems to have. And when I come to church or when I'm around a bunch of Christians or a bunch of people that are of faith, I feel a little bit like the outsider. It's almost like everyone else is getting something and I'm not getting it. And I'm not even sure if I want to get what they're getting, but I'm asking questions, but I'm still not sure. See, if that's you tonight, this is your story. Or maybe you're here, and if you were being really honest, you don't even really want to be here. Because it's just kind of hard to sing some of these songs right now, because you sing them and you say the words, and it's kind of like, I think I believe this with my head. But right now, there's just some stuff going on in my life, and I just don't know if I really believe this about God, because the truth is, maybe no one else knows about it, but the truth is deep down, there's some pretty deep hurt, or there's some pretty deep pain, and you're angry, and you're upset, and you're bitter, and you're mad at God, but maybe more than anything else, you just feel empty. You see, if that's your story, then this is your story, because that's the story of Ruth. And so what I want us to do for the next few weeks is just read this story and begin to put ourselves in the story. And the way stories work is a lot different than other parts of the Bible we might read. If you read one of the letters of Paul, or if you read some of Jesus' teachings, maybe the Sermon on the Mount, it's easy to pick out principles from those teachings and things that we can apply immediately in our life and sort of jot them down, and that's something I'll do tomorrow, you know, or whatever. And those are good things, but that's not the way stories usually work. There's not always nice, neat principles at the end of each chapter of the story. I mean, you heard the first chapter right there. What's the principle of that one? You know, don't let famine and death happen to you. You know, I mean, what would you do with that? And so I'm not going to probably, this is going to be a little bit different sermon series than normal. And so what I'm going to do is just ask you to read the story with me and let's do it together. Let's put ourselves in the story. And along the way, I'll try to pick out some cultural things and try to explain some things that are going on. And maybe we can step back and ask, well, what can we learn about Ruth right here? And what can we learn from Naomi right here, or the people in the story? But ultimately, I'd love to just ask the question, what can we learn about God through this story? And how do we sense his hand moving in the lives of these very messy people living very messy lives? And in doing so, how can we sense his hand in our messy lives? So we're going to read through the story. We're not going to read back through the whole thing, but if you want to turn your Bibles to Ruth chapter 1, take a minute to do it. It's in the Old Testament, and if you have to go to the table of contents to figure out where it is, that's totally fine. It's a short book, and it's easy to skip over, so go ahead and do that now. And I'm not going to read back through all of the verses, but we're going to read through some of them and take a look at this story once again. So starting in Ruth chapter 1, starting in verse 1, I'm reading from the TNIV translation. It's a little different from the paraphrase that Lindsay read, but this is what it says. Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. And they married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. And after they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. So this story takes place in the time of Judges, which, if you like numbers, that's about 1200 BC in the history of Israel. And during this time, this took place after the Israelites had come out of Egypt. So you remember Moses leads them out of Egypt in Mount Sinai. They receive the Ten Commandments, and then they come into the promised land of Israel. But they settled there, and there was still chaos in the land. There weren't any kings at that time. There was no government. There was no real structure to the land. There was a lot of violence. There was a lot of war. There was a lot of immorality. There were just all kinds of bad stuff. And it was almost like every, you know, man or woman for themselves. And you know, maybe the best picture I could think of is think about modern-day Sudan. Think about living in modern-day Afghanistan. That's what it would have been like living in Israel during this time of the Judges. And yet, when we read the story right off the bat, there's a little bit of irony because we hear that it's going to be about this family who lives in this little tiny village called Bethlehem. And in Hebrew, the word Beit Lechem actually meant house of bread. And Hebrew words and Hebrew names are often very significant in stories. So we read that. We read about this little village called House of Bread. And we think, well, maybe this is going to be a story about abundance. Maybe it's going to be about bread. Maybe it's going to be about food. Who knows? And then we hear some other nice names. This family that we're going to read about, the man's name is Elimelech, which means my God is king in Hebrew. And the woman's name is Naomi, which means pleasant or good. That's what her name meant. So this is going to be a nice story about some nice people that live in a nice little village in the middle of Israel who probably have full barns and lots of food and lots of things. But we see right off in the very first verse that it's not going to be that at all. That in fact there's a famine in the land and there are no crops and the fields are empty and there is no food. Now, if you were Elimelech and Naomi, during that time, you wouldn't have perceived the famine as this natural occurrence. It wouldn't have been, well, it just hasn't rained in a long time, and that happens every 10 or 20 years. It wouldn't have been, well, the bugs came in and ate all our crops this year, or we didn't till the ground properly, and that's why the crops aren't growing very well. You wouldn't have thought like that as an ancient Hebrew Israelite. You would have known that the reason there was a famine in the land is because God's hand had turned against them. Because you see, when they came into the promised land, God told them, he said, now you're going into this amazing land and I'm going to give you all this food and all these things there. And as long as you follow me and as long as you follow my commands, as long as you worship me and don't turn to other gods, as long as you do what I say, I will always bless you. I'll always bring rain. I'll make your crops grow. You'll always have plenty to eat. You'll always have plenty of food. But if you turn away from me, if you begin worshiping other gods, if you begin rejecting my laws and my commands, if you begin doing all the things that I've told you not to do for your own benefit, then I won't bring the rain. I'll bring famine. I'll bring pestilence. And so they would have known, or at least they would have thought, that the reason they were experiencing famine in their land was because God was punishing them in hopes that ultimately they would turn back to God. And so we see very early in the story, it's not going to be a story about nice people, abundant crops, who have a lot of things in their lives. It's going to be a story about people who are broken and who are empty. And it leads me to kind of ask the question tonight, I wonder, what about some of us? Would any of us say, well, you know what? I kind of know what it feels like to feel some emptiness right now. Maybe the economy forced you to leave your job. You didn't want to leave your job, but you were told you had to leave your job. So maybe you didn't have a job. Maybe you haven't had a job for a little while. Maybe your checking account is a little more empty than you'd like it to be. Maybe your refrigerator is a little more empty than you would like it to be. I remember those days in college. Anybody remember that? Yeah. Some of you might be experiencing that now. Maybe your house or your apartment is more empty than you like it to be. Maybe you're single and you want to be married, but it just hasn't happened. Maybe your kids have grown up and they've moved away and now it feels a little weird because they're gone and your house feels kind of empty again. Or maybe you want to have kids And you've been trying to have kids, and you can't. And your house feels empty. It feels like something is missing in your life. You see, if that's your story, that's the story of Naomi and Ruth. Now, it's also going to be a story about women, which is interesting because in the Old Testament, most stories are about men because it was a patriarchal culture, it was a traditional culture, the men were the leaders, the kings were the men. So most of the stories in the Bible and in ancient literature are about men. And we would think this story is going to be about men because it talks about Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion. And oh, by the way, he had a wife and, you know. But pretty quickly, within just a few verses, all the men are dead and the rest of the story is going to be about a couple of women, which makes it unique. Now, it's also a story about immigrants because what we hear is that Elimelech and Naomi realize that there's really no good future left for them in Bethlehem. There's no food, there's no crops, there's nothing there. And they hear that in the country of Moab, there might be hope. They might be able to find a job there. They might be able to find food. They might be able to provide for their family there. And it would have been really tough for them to even consider this as an option because the Israelites hated the Moabites and the Moabites hated the Israelites. So this was sort of a last ditch thing for them to say, you know what? The economic conditions in Moab are a lot better. We're going to hate it there. They're going to hate us there. But it's our only hope. So let's go to Moab. And so they pack up and they move to Moab. And they're immigrants there. They're people who don't speak the language. They're people who don't know the culture. We read that Naomi's husband eventually dies. And she's a widow there. And so she's the one thing that was sort of her status symbol, and unfortunately that's the way it worked in olden times, was now gone, and she's a widow. And so she's an immigrant in this foreign land where people probably judged her. They were probably prejudiced against her. They were probably racist against her. They probably looked down on her. They didn't want to care for her when she was going through tough times. In fact, they probably just wished she would go back to Israel where she belongs. You see, Naomi is the Mexican day laborer. Naomi is the illegal alien. Naomi is the person that's the third class citizen in Moab. And Ruth is going to be in the same position because Ruth eventually travels back to Israel. And they hate the Moabites. And she's going to experience the same kind of prejudice, the same kind of looking down upon that Naomi experienced in Moab. In fact, when we read this story over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see people don't even refer to Ruth oftentimes by her name. They just say that foreigner, that immigrant, that Moabite. Which leads me to ask the question, and I'm not getting into politics or legislation or any of those kind of things, but it does lead me to ask the question, how do we view the immigrants in our midst? Do we see stories behind their faces? Do we possibly see Naomi in their lives and Ruth in their lives? Do we wonder what's driven them here? The fact that maybe they're just looking for a better life? Maybe that's all they've been able to do? Maybe there really is a story there. And maybe there really is a posture and an attitude that we need to take towards them that's very different. And we're going to see that's what the people of Israel did to Ruth next week. But we can't forget all throughout the story, it's not just a story about women, it's a story about immigrants. Now, to keep going in the story, Naomi, her husband dies. And she's been living there in Moab for a little while, and her two sons get married to Moabite women. Now, because they were Israelites and they married Moabite women, the text doesn't say this, but we can imply that Ruth and Orpah were probably pretty lower class in Moabite society because no middle or upper class Moabite woman would have married an Israelite man. And so Ruth and Orpah probably came from pretty meager means. And so think about Naomi's life. She's packed up. She's moved to Moab. Her husband died. And all she has left is her two sons, and they've married these poor Moabite women. What does she have to hope for? Well, pretty much the only thing she has to hope for is children. Because in that culture and in that society, children meant everything. Children were going to carry on the family line. Children were going to give you significance in culture. I mean, when you got married, you started having children right away. Children were going to carry on the family inheritance. Children were going to make sure the land and any of the crops or anything stayed in the family. And then very pragmatically, when you grew up and got older, children were going to be the ones that took care of you. There was no Social Security. There was no Medicare. There was none of that in that kind of society. And so children were everything. And yet, Mahlon and Chilion get married to these women. A month goes by, no children. 2 months goes by, no children. 3 months, 4 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years. 10 years goes by, and they can't have any children. The one thing that Naomi might have put any hope in for her future. And for 10 years, 120 months, two different daughters-in-law, 240 cycles of bad news coming back. That no children. Now, to make it almost worse and to make God seem even more cruel and evil, Mahlon and Chilion then die. And Naomi's left with nothing but these two Moabite daughters-in-law. Now, we talk about the story of Job in the Bible, and we read this several months ago, and we talk about how much suffering and how much that Job experienced. And if you know the story, you remember the news comes to Job that one day all of his children are taken away from him or are killed, and basically all of his produce and all of his livestock and livelihood is taken away from him. And we think about how tragic and how terrible that must have been and the kind of suffering and questions that Job must have gone through. But Job was still a man in a traditional culture. Job could still work. Job still had land. Job still had a wife. Job could still have other children. And you read the story of Naomi, and her husband's taken away, her sons are taken away. She's an immigrant in a foreign land where no one wants her. Everyone just wants her to go back to Israel. Her two daughters-in-law can't have any children. She basically has nothing. She's been running for this famine, and everything in her life for 10 years straight tells her that God's hand is against her. Nothing has gone right, and nothing looks like it ever will go right. To which she finally, when she hears the news that things are okay in Bethlehem, she decides to go back. And she knows it doesn't make any sense for Orpah and Ruth to come back with her because there's nothing for them in Israel. I mean, they're not going to marry Israelite men because no Israelite man's going to marry a Moabite woman. They're just going to be hated there and experience basically the same thing Naomi has experienced in Moab. They're lower, class, they're poor, they don't have anything, they're probably not going to find any work. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. The only thing that they should do is just stay in Moab and go back to their mothers and their fathers and their own families. And maybe, just maybe, they can find other husbands and maybe, just maybe, have children with those other husbands. And so Naomi heads back on the road, and there's a little bit of going back and forth because she tells them, no, just go on back. And they say, no, we'll get going with you. And then she finally comes back and she says to them, starting in verse 11, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if, crazy idea here, but even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it's more bitter for me than for you because the Lord's hand has turned against me." And then when Naomi does return to Bethlehem, you remember her friends and the people that knew her 10 years before, they see her and they say, "Is that Naomi? It doesn't even look like her anymore. It's almost like life has just beaten her down, and it just doesn't even look like the same Naomi that left us. And do you remember what she says back to them? Verse 20. Don't call me Naomi, which, remember, means pleasant. Call me Mara, which in Hebrew meant bitter. Call me Mara because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. You see, Naomi has basically hit rock bottom. Everything in her life has gone horribly bad. And she is broken. She's angry. She's bitter. But probably more than anything else, she just feels empty. Now, I gotta imagine there's probably a couple of people, maybe a few people tonight, who could say, I feel like that right now. Like, there's been some junk going on in my life for a long time. And it has not gotten any better. And it is just getting worse. And my prayers seem to don't be answered. And everything I've said to God, all I hear back is silence. And there's just nothing. And I'm angry and I'm bitter. And yet, just like Naomi, maybe more than anything else, it just feels so empty right now. And if you're feeling that at all, let me just humbly make a couple of suggestions. If that's where you are, then you have every right in the world to cry out to God and let Him know what you're going through and tell Him how angry and how bitter and how upset you really are. You see, you can be just like Job who did that. You can be just like Naomi who did that. You can be just like, there was one writer of Psalm 13 who basically let God have it. And this is what the psalmist said in Psalm 13. He said, "How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me?" You see, you can make that your prayer. And did you know that even Job made that his prayer, and Naomi made that her prayer, and the psalmist made that his prayer. Did you know also that Jesus himself, when he was dying on the cross, carrying the emptiness and the brokenness of the entire world, do you remember what he cried out? He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? Why is this happening to me? Couldn't there be any other way? Couldn't you have stepped in and done something? You see, you can make that your prayer. The Son of God knows what you're going through. But the second thing you need to do if you're going through hardship is not just pray that prayer, but you need to come to us and you need to ask us to pray that prayer with you. You need to ask us to walk through this with you. You need to ask some of us to be empty and broken with you. And here's the truth. We're not going to do it very well. And we're going to say some stupid stuff. And when you come to us with your problems, we're probably going to try to fix you. And we're probably going to offer you easy pat answers and easy solutions. And I'm really good at that. So don't come to me unless you know me really well. And then I'll try not to offer easy solutions, but that's what we do. And yet, would you take a risk? And would you be vulnerable? And would you go to somebody and say, look, this is what I'm going through right now. Would you walk through this with me? Because we need to do that with each other. We need to carry each other's brokenness. We need to carry each other's emptiness. And when you don't have faith, we need to have it for you. And when you don't have hope, we need to have it for you. Because you see, the story of Naomi is not just a story about emptiness and brokenness. And it's not just Naomi's story. It's Ruth's story too. Because if they're standing on that road, Ruth could have said exactly what Orpah said. And she could have done, and she would have been justified, and that would have been the smartest, wisest, most logical thing for her to do. There's no sense in her going to Israel. She should have gone back to her family. And yet, I think what Ruth says couldn't be a more picture-perfect illustration of the gospel message. When she turns to Naomi, and she says on that road in verse 16, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord, Yahweh God, your God, may He deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." In other words, Ruth comes to Naomi and she says basically, "Look, I love you. And I'm going to walk through this with you. And I'm not going to let you face this alone. And I know it's been terrible for years and years and years. And I know it doesn't feel like it can get any better. But I'm going to be with you. And when you lose faith and you lose hope, I'll have it for you. And together, we will keep walking through this. And together, we will try to discern what God's hand is in all of this. But the truth is, I don't believe that God has let go of you. And because I don't believe God has let go of you, I'm not going to let go of you. I'll walk with you through this." What a perfect picture of God's love for us. And I think it calls us to ask one significant question tonight. For most of us who are not going through something like this, I think it calls for us to ask, who are the Naomis in our lives? Is there a Naomi in your life? Is there a Naomi in your neighborhood? Maybe it's a neighbor. Is there a Naomi at your workplace, at your school? Is there a Naomi in this community? Is there a Naomi in your small group? Maybe someone that's hasn't said much, they're quiet, but you can just tell looking at their face, they're beaten down and broken down, and they're going through some really difficult stuff. Is there a Naomi in your life that you could reach out to, and you can't do this with a lot of people, but is there somebody that you could look at and say, "Look, I can tell you're going through some tough stuff. Would you let me walk through that with you?" And I'm not going to have all the answers, and I won't be able to solve anything, and I don't even understand all the things that are going on in your life, but I want to be there with you, and I want to walk through this with you. And if you need to cry, you can cry with me. And if you need to scream and vent and be angry, you can scream and vent and be angry at me. Whatever it takes. Because right now, I know you don't feel like God is very present in your life. But I want God to be present through me. And so I'll be present with you. Is there somebody that maybe God is calling you to walk through life like that with? Because what would our church look like? Think about this for a second. What would our church look like if we were known as a people, a group of people that did that for each other? I mean, what do you think it would look like if people came to church here or got in one of our groups or got to know people here and they said, "Man, I don't know if I believe what all those people believe and I don't know all the songs or all that kind of stuff, but those people love each other. Those people care for each other. And when someone's going through a difficult time, man, people rally. And they come around that person, and they help them out, and they pray for them, and they care for them, and they walk through life together." So what would our church look like? What would this group look like if that's what we were known for? The story that we're reading, it's a story of women. It's a story of immigrants. It's a story of emptiness and brokenness. But it's also a gospel story of God's love for us. Because we started out by reading it in the first verse. It told us there was a famine in the land. And that the fields were empty. The ground was fallow. And the crops had all died. And Naomi's life seemed to follow that same course. Her husband and her sons died. Her daughters-in-law couldn't have children. They were barren. And her life was pretty much empty coming back to Bethlehem. But the last verse of chapter 1 closes by telling us, "So Naomi returned from Moab, not by herself, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning." Let me close this in a word of prayer. Lord God, as I said, I'm sure there's folks here who are going through minor hardships. And I'm sure there are folks here who are going through pretty substantial stuff. So, Lord God, I pray that your presence would be with us. And Lord, for those who aren't feeling your presence, for those who are feeling your silence right now, would you help us to embody your presence? God, I think about this Christmas season we're coming into where we celebrate your birth and the word that was said of you, Emmanuel, God with us. God, would you be with each one of us tonight? And Lord, for those of us who maybe things are going pretty good right now, would you help us to see those around us who are hurting? Would you help us to not allow their stories to just be one of loss and pain and hurt, but for their stories to also be one of care and love and help and maybe ultimately redemption? Lord, we need you and we surrender everything to you. And as Brian sings this song that he wrote over the last couple of months, born out of his own story of pain and brokenness in his own life, would you help these words be impressed deep within each of our souls? We pray all this in your name. Amen.